Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, wow. Good evening and welcome to ScaryCast. This is a special edition. I'm Dr. John Stamey, as other people know me, but I'm Dr. John, and glad to be here tonight with a new friend who was referred to me by one of the best artists in Northeast Georgia. The guy's name is Kip Ramey. We're going to have Kip on here sometime soon. He's busy a lot of the times, and I spoke with him and thanked him for introducing me to our guest tonight, who is David Metcalf of the Athens, Georgia area. We love Athens. It's so near Clayton, Georgia. So much spiritual, so much psychic, so much UFO, so much everything going on in that area of Northeast Georgia. It's great to have David. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, and it's great to be here. This is going to be a good conversation we have with Santa Muerta. It's going to be a good introduction for folks on the notorious Saint Death.
Well, that's right, and I wanted to. You and I talked, I think, 2 days ago, and I said this is so interesting, and so tonight I just said we got to try to do this because a lot of people want to know about Saint Death or Santa Muerta. So for the first little while, David, can we make this Santa Muerta 101 for people like me who have a little bit of experience in these areas of the paranormal, but we really don't know much about Santa Muerta. So if that's all right with you, first of all, I think maybe I'd better let you tell us just a little bit about you, because you're involved with an organization, or at least a website, that promotes information about Santa Muerta, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, since about 2013, I've been working with Dr. Andrew Chestnut, who's the chair of Catholic Studies at Virginia Commonwealth University. And he wrote probably the only scholarly book available on Santa Muerta in English, which is Devoted to Death, Santa Muerta, a Skeleton Saint. And that's published by Oxford University Press. It's now in its second edition. And yeah, I've been looking at the tradition since about 2005. I did an interview with Andrew in 2012 when the book came out. And that was published on The Revealer, which is New York University's media and religious studies journal. So we did this interview and we got along good. And the Morbid Anatomy Museum in Brooklyn wanted to do a kind of panel talk on the topic and invited Andrew and I up to Brooklyn to host this, this panel where we would discuss this emerging spiritual tradition. And after that, we got to talking and we started SkeletonSaint.com to kind of be a clearinghouse for information and news that was coming out. We could cover it quicker than the news could, and we could also provide a perspective that was unique to his scholarly bent and my own scholarly bent, and kind of avoid the traps of the news media. You know, they like to sensationalize stuff. There are some sensational elements to it, but we wanted to capture a little bit more human element to what folks were doing with this folk saint.
Wow. Now, two things. First of all, tell us a little bit about the Morbid Anatomy Museum. That sounds very interesting, especially for ScaryCast listeners.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, that would definitely be, that's right up ScaryCast alley. So Morbid Anatomy was founded by a lady, Joanna Ebstein, and she had a collection of medical curios and books on the medical humanities that she, there was this art collective up there called the Observatory at the time. It's no longer in existence, but they had a small kind of gallery space, and part of that gallery space was the Morbid Anatomy library. And so it was her collection of medical curios, two-headed fetuses. She is an expert on what's called anatomical Venuses, which were waxwork anatomical women that were used in medical studies in the Enlightenment era. And so, you know, she had that kind of bent of stuff there. And they hosted this lecture series, which she's still hosting as the Morbid Anatomy Museum. It travels around now. It's no longer housed in a single spot. But so she hosted a lecture series with various, you know, artists, scholars, researchers of all sorts would come to Morbid Anatomy to discuss their work. And, you know, it was all along the lines of things that you wouldn't normally see at a university or a college. They were, you know, they were academic researchers, you know, or noted artists and that, but she kind of opened up a space to discuss these topics which weren't being covered, such as Santa Muerta. And so, it's a really fascinating thing. You can look up Morbid Anatomy, and there's a ton of stuff out there on it. She runs a great website, which unfortunately I don't know off the hand what the URL is, but yeah, it's a really interesting group of folks. She's published a book on the anatomical Venuses, which is a fascinating look at kind of the way that the body was viewed over time and how we started to, you know, move from a more kind of esoteric understanding of anatomy towards the medical sciences and that. So really, really interesting stuff.
That is amazing that you've just told me a number of things I've never heard of. I can tell you one thing. I'm like one of the most voracious students you'll ever meet, and this is great. You've just opened my eyes to so many new topics, and I really appreciate that because I think the more we learn, the better prepared we are for this world. And yeah, I want to discuss some of this more in depth with you off the air, and you know we can maybe
sure.
Put some resources up on ScaryCast. Nothing that would compete with Skeleton Saint, but you know, just a variety of things that people could go look at and enjoy and learn from, because that's what we're here about. I mean, I know that when you talk about Morbid Anatomy, I guess I'm a little bit interested in a similar kind of newish topic that has its roots in maybe 200 years ago in Germany, the Krampus. Is that
yeah?
I'm sure
yeah.
that's something
they
you're
actually,
familiar with, right?
They
Pardon?
Helped popularize that. Yeah, they helped popularize the Krampus stuff that we see today, the kind of media around the Krampus tradition. Morbid Anatomy was one of the front runners for bringing that out to the public. Their Christmas party that they host is a Krampus party. So, yeah.
Well, that's great because last year I hosted the first International Krampus Festival in Camden, South Carolina. And it was very poorly received in the town. So we're moving it to Charleston, which is the holy city, the city of religious freedom. So the first weekend in December will be the second International Krampus Festival. And maybe you and I can connect together for that and bring some of these other
sure.
folks down. I think it'd be wonderful. It's just exciting, the things that we have to share and learn about. Now, I don't want to get too off topic because our topic today is the Skeleton Saint. And could you start with Skeleton Saint 101 for me and all of our listeners, please, sir?
Sure. Yeah, in largely Catholic countries, even in Italy, but Catholicism, when it hits the kind of folk culture, it's very interesting, and there's only so much the church can do to control the popular devotions that develop out of it. So you find a lot of what are called folk saints, which are, people who the locals consider particularly pious, and when they pass away, oftentimes people will claim that there is some sort of miraculous occurrence that happens either around their grave or through the invocation of their name, or someone will have a dream where this individual will come to them in the dream and, heal them or do some sort of miraculous, event for them. And in Mexico, there's been a development where Saint Death has become a figure. And, it originally came out of a kind of intermixing of indigenous culture with the colonial influences when they would do, you know, when the church would do the passion plays, you would have the figure of the holy death. And that would be when Christ is crucified, they would have an actor portraying death coming to, you know, take Christ away, and then Christ would conquer death, and you would have this as part of the passion play. Well, that figure intermixed with, you know, the Mesoamerican, you know, death culture, which, you know, through, you know, Day of the Dead and that kind of thing. And so
it's huge. It's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And they have it's a very different way of viewing death. I think that a lot of folks in the United States might be used to a more like, morbid, right? Morbid sense of death. And in Mexico, it's not like that. There's a celebration of life through death and this whole kind of a much more nuanced understanding of life and death and the natural processes and that. So Saint Death has, you know, kind of developed out of that. There's mentions in the Inquisition writings of indigenous people kind of worshiping this figure. Well, worship is a bad word, paying devotion to this figure. And then you see again in 1940, there's mention of love spells associated with a Saint Death figure, that women would petition Saint Death to bring back errant husbands or boyfriends. So if the boyfriend was cheating on them or their husband was cheating on them, they would petition Saint Death to bring him to his knees and bring him back. So it's this, you know, or even, you know, on a less kind of direct way, if someone was looking for love, they would petition Saint Death to bring him, to bring them, you know, their love.
Right.
Now,
right.
So
now,
that was,
I wanted to, I just want to interject one thing real quickly.
Oh, sure.
There was a movie in the late 1930s. It was quite a revolutionary movie called Death Takes a Holiday. And I don't know if you're
okay.
familiar
mm-hmm.
with this. Are you familiar with it?
A little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was for those that don't know about this. And there have been three instances actually that this theme has come across. Number one is, they're on an airplane. It was in the late 30s or early 40s, and then they were hearing songs by entertainers who had died, all kinds of crazy things. And they heard on the radio that no one was dying all over the world, you know, and it was terrible.
Right. Right.
And then they realized that death had fallen in love with a woman who was about to die, and he couldn't take her. So he jumped on an airplane with her. Well, there's like a lost, I'm going to call it a lost Twilight Zone episode called The End of the Line. Now, I know about it. Two or three folks have seen it. It does not seem to be available. And then, of course, and don't laugh, but the first episode of Family Guy is a complete takeoff on Death Takes a Holiday. You know, the Grim Reaper comes
right.
and breaks his ankle.
Right.
I mean, you know, I think popular culture has portrayed death as at least those three times. I mean, there are more, of course. I think, Adam Sandler has played death. Everybody's played death, but this has, it's a great theme that death is personified, and it's not as Satan. It's a different,
right.
Am I correct? It's a different entity.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
It's the entity that takes you across the river Styx. Am I correct on that? Or
that's
am
exactly
I?
That's exactly how. That's no. That's a good way for especially folks in the United States to kind of understand where the Saint Death tradition is kind of placing itself in its understanding of death. It's very much that kind of relationship with death, as opposed to, you know, kind of a satanic figure that does, you know, evil and that kind of thing. Now, there is that, when we'll get into that and after we kind of cover the 101, there is a darker side to the tradition, which you can't ignore. But, yeah, for the most part, most devotees have that kind of relationship with Santa Muerta. That's a good
right,
way to look at it.
And one thing, so that I do not forget it, please cover, if you would, there are a number of psychics who are very real and do what they do, and they say that they are constantly meeting spirits that don't know how to cross over. Cross over means go to the light. And it, please touch on that if you would. I'll make a note here. I mean, yeah, sorry, this is totally unrehearsed, totally live, totally everything. But I'll make a note of that and make sure we cover it. But, you know, because these are all – they're all interrelated and they're wonderful topics to know about, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and it actually does interrelate with the tradition, because once you get into kind of the – I can actually talk to one devotee that I'm good friends with, which has an interesting story, which we'll probably talk about later, because it's –
Right.
That he's a fellow from East Texas that you wouldn't think would become a devotee of a Mexican folk saint, but so that definitely will, that plays into it, and we can definitely talk on that.
Right.
So when you know, with the folk saint of Saint Death, in the 1940s, you have this kind of love spell aspect to it. There's actually a specific novena, which is a 9-day prayer. And there's, in the Catholic tradition, a 9-day prayer is it's almost like a vow that you take to do this 9-day prayer, which includes, you know, Hail Marys and that kind of thing, that you do. So with Santa Muerta, there's a sort of unofficial novena that was related to bringing back a lost lover, or, you know, a lost husband or wife. Now, in the late 80s, there's a figure, Adolfo Constanzo, who was a sorcerer for hire for the drug cartels. And unfortunately, he becomes the first person in the contemporary period where we see the figure of Santa Muerta appear. And it's actually in a photo taken after he was arrested for some horrible murders that happened in Brownsville in North Mexico. Now, that's in the late 80s. I think that's about 89. In 2001 is the next time that we see Santa Muerta appear. And she appears when Dona Keita, who is a enchilada vendor in Tepito, which is one of the worst neighborhoods in Mexico City. It's actually been a black market since the Aztec period. So it has maintained it's called Barrio Bravo, which means, you know, like the strong barrio, but, you know, it's a very rough neighborhood. Now, Dona Keita, one of her sons, had been injured and it was life-threatening. She petitioned Santa Muerta. She had this tradition in her family of devotion to Saint Death. She petitioned Saint Death. Her son makes it through I think he was actually stabbed through the head, makes it through his injury. He comes back and he gifts her this life-size skeleton statue as an icon for Saint Death. And it was too big to put in her devotional room. It was too big for her vending stand. So she actually builds a glass case on the outside of her store front area, and people come and they start actually paying devotion to it. And this is when we see this underground tradition, which up to that point had been very quiet, very personal. It suddenly goes public. And there's another figure came out as well at this time. So you see these different people start to bring this tradition public, and you start to see temples starting to set up. So these kind of chapels, Santa Muerta in the underground up to this point had also been a figure that was used as folks were crossing over the border. They would have these chaplets, which are like a little kind of talisman of Saint Death, almost as if, you know, I hope that I don't die as I'm trying to cross the border. So she becomes this patron of people that have no hope and people who think that they're going to die. You know, in the rough neighborhoods, she was petitioned, you know, for a good death. So the idea being that most likely when I step out my door, I may die today. And I just hope that when I do die, it's a good death and it's a holy death. And I'm taken to God as opposed to a terrible death where I suffer, you know. And so it becomes this really interesting reflection on the current state of society, because her devotions go from a patroness of love to a patroness of people who have no hope. And so she's petitioned for, you know, health and healing, but health and healing in the sense of, you know, of addiction and, you know, gunshot wounds. She's become a patroness of transgender people who the church rejected. There's a devotee up in New York who came from Mexico City. And when she came to New York, she actually came over because she had, well, and her devotion developed because she had gone to the church to pray. And the priest told her, we have no place for your people here. You know, get out. Like, we don't want you here. So she said, well, okay, so I'll pray to Saint Death. And so that's how her devotion developed from that. And, you know, you see it with in addiction where, you know, an addict would go to the church and the church would say, you're disgusting. Get out of here. We don't want your kind here. You're, you know, you're not welcome. And so they would go to Saint Death and they would pray to Saint Death. And then a lot of people would report that their addictions passed away and they were, you know, they were free of that. Cabbies would pray to her because, you know, every time they got in their cab, there was a good chance they were going to get robbed or killed. Lawyers prayed to her in terms of, you know, again, they would be dealing with whatever, you know, in the criminal courts and that, and they were afraid of getting killed. Police, there's a lot of police devotees to her because it's dangerous. They're out in the streets of Mexico City. So it develops in this really interesting way, that it's really hard to codify in the news, because the news, you know, if you're reporting on a crime and that, you see Santa Muerta pop up in a criminal situation. And so when the news reports it, you know, you've got a crime and then you have Santa Muerta. Now, when you actually look at it though, you see people's lives in pain, and you see people in pain, and they're looking for somebody or something that will help them out of that situation. And so she's grown up in this, and that, you know, it's a very powerful look at the contemporary state of the world, especially in Mexico, where, you know, another aspect of her devotion is women who are afraid of being murdered because of the number of murders that happen, you know, femicide in Mexico, northern Mexico, and that is, the numbers are crazy. My friend who I was mentioning earlier from East Texas, where he splits his time between, his wife is in Mexico and he works as a geosurveyor up in the United States. And when he goes back down to Mexico, they live right by a river who's called, the name of the river is the River of Remedies. Now, unfortunately, that name's become kind of haunting because it's known for the number of bodies that float through it, or body parts. So, you know, it's this, Santa Muerta kind of sits over this really viscerally, you know, kind of disturbing aspect of our world that a lot of people don't want to look at, you know. And so, unfortunately, the news media takes advantage of that and kind of highlights that as opposed to highlighting the pain, you know. But, it's a very interesting kind of thing.
I want to make a remark. There is no such thing as the news media. All the news is a program by a corporation who is there to make a profit for their shareholders. There is no more news.
Yeah.
You heard it here first. There's no more news. It's all entertainment. And the only news you can get are from a crazy Dr. John and crazy David Metcalf, who are not at all crazy. And so, you know, right. I'm sorry. David, will you forgive me? Occasionally, I have to jump up on. I have a little soapbox right here. I have to jump up on it occasionally. Is that okay?
Jump up on it and preach, because I mean, there was a story that just ran in the an Atlanta news station did a story on Santa Muerta, which only highlighted the kind of violent aspect of it, and I was really disappointed because, you know, they were. And that's the interesting thing, too, is that people may, this may be the first time that people have heard of this tradition, but you know, and which the Atlanta news media reported it that way, as if this was popping up and it was new. I moved to Georgia in 2011, and I was already seeing Santa Muerta stuff here. It wasn't new. You know, it's not, it's been around since 2001. So at least publicly, you know, so it's, yeah. So definitely preach. it's,
I mean, and I
they're
think
not reporting the truth.
They're not, they're reporting something that will get them listeners or viewers. That's all
right.
They're doing. And I don't care how many people desperately love CNN or desperately love Fox News. They are nothing more than two entertainment outlets. That's all they are.
Yeah.
One says one thing, one says the other. It's up to you, the individual, to determine which one is telling the truth. And it puts more responsibility, I think, on all of us, and maybe we're not ready for it. Maybe it's a lot easier to listen to one channel or the other. I mean, what the overlap's, what, 6-7%? It's just crazy small. I mean, nobody listens to both. They listen to one or the other. And the reason I bring them up is because those are the two polarizing sides of politics today. But it's all about viewers, and that's all it is. And Santa Muerta is something, it's a concept that once I spoke with you, two nights ago we spoke, and I did a little bit of research, and it was enough to make me say tonight, let's please talk about this. Because I think the more that people hear and understand about it, It's like when I deal with the Bigfoot community. Here's a new way of categorizing the Bigfoot community. You have the naturalists, you have the mind speak, and then you have the complete disbelievers. The naturalists being those that go out for 25 years and never see Bigfoot. They just like hanging out in the woods. The mind speak are the people that say they talk to Bigfoot through their minds and they get messages. And then there's a lot of other people that just say, oh, well, there's no such thing. And that's what I deal with when I run Bigfoot conferences. So yeah, culture is changing, and people need to realize that. And I think we are an important first step in talking about this. Now let me ask you this: do you think we can get Dr. Andrew Chestnut, correct?
Yeah, we can definitely try. Yeah, he's on sabbatical right now, actually doing research in Mexico, and I believe Europe on Catholic death culture. So as soon
as
he has a free opportunity,
we'll see. Yeah,
I'm sure that would be
great. So we'll talk about that. So now, would you say that we have reasonably covered the Santa Muerta 101? Exactly that it's.
I think so.
It's a folk saint. It has to do with change, and that's what it is. And Santa Muerta is maybe a patron saint of last resort.
Absolutely, yeah. And she's, you know, a lot of devotees. So we can kind of get into the paranormal aspects of it now, which is
okay. I got one more question that has been haunting, and it has to do with we have Jesus, and then we have Santa Muerta. What are the similarities and differences? Because for so many people in the world, Jesus is the last hope. And now what you're saying is there's now a new folk saint who is the last hope. What is the reconciliation between the two?
Well, a lot of devotees in Mexico will consider themselves Catholic and also be devoted to Santa Muerta. So in at least in Mexico, the tradition is that the folk saints sit beside Jesus. They don't, you know, it's not really a competition. It's all a path to God. And, you know, so the Santa Muerta acts in more of a practical manner. You know, a lot of people who have an addiction problem or whatever, they would feel weird for some of the prayers that they wanted to do, that Santa Muerta kind of sits in that place of kind of an intermediary. So, you know, in Catholic tradition, the saints are an intermediary in between that are on a more practical level. So if you don't have money, right, if you're poor, and you need money, you don't really want to pray to Jesus for money. You know, that kind of in the Catholic tradition, that's kind of strange. So they would pray to a saint that was over money. And so Santa Muerta has become this, what Andrew calls a multifaceted miracle worker, where pretty much anything you need, you can petition Santa Muerta for. Now, when Santa Muerta has...
Hold on. Obviously, you can tell I'm Protestant because that's not what we have. So, and thank you very much for explaining that, because I think one thing that our culture really does a bad job of is teaching people about religion and teaching them the differences between the Protestant religion and the Catholic religion. They're completely different, but yet they're two different looks at the same thing. They just operate and are organized differently.
That's why I made sure to highlight in Catholicism. And so this is a Catholic folk saint. And so, you know, a Protestant, this is probably not gonna fly. You know, and that's why there's a difference. That's why there's Catholicism and Protestantism. They have two different kind of views of things. You know, and so in the Catholic tradition, like that's how it works. Now, when Santa Muerta has spread out to the United States and globally now, you know, it's gone beyond a Catholic folk saint, and it has actually become kind of its own deal. So, you know, it's hit the New Age, it's hit the pagan community, and it's become where devotees will just simply, you know, work with Santa Muerta, or Santa Muerta will blend in with whatever kind of belief structure that folks are working with, you know. So it does get complicated once you get out of the kind of root folk tradition. You know, so one of the my friend that I was mentioning earlier from East Texas, Hank, he, you know, he's from East Texas. He was Protestant. You know, he came up in a Pentecostal tradition. The way that he works with her is, you know, he works with her in a really kind of interesting way. He works with her and his mother, who's passed. And so he, you know, he talks to his mother. He's got a really complex altar. You know, and that's another thing to kind of understand about the folk saint tradition. It's very altar based. So, you know, you have a statue, you have your petitions, you have your gifts. You know, a lot of, when you build the altar for Santa Muerta, apples are a common, you know, kind of gift that you would give. Water you have there as well, you know, different alcoholic stuff. One of the interesting things about Santa Muerta is that marijuana is actually, you know, one of the things that is used in working with her. So people will offer marijuana as well. And that, you know, that's outside of the kind of unfortunate drug ties that have, you know, kind of cropped up with the tradition as well. There is a darker side to it. Not for all the devotees, but there is a small subset that the cartels do have a relationship with Santa Muerta, some of them. So, but yeah, you have these offerings that you give to her. So, you know, on Hank's altar, he has a picture of his mother. He has a picture of his father, both of whom have passed. And, you know, he works with them as well. He works with their spirits as well through the altar. So, you know, he has kind of a unique hybrid of Pentecostal, Santa Muerta, and, you know, kind of his own deal that he works with that. It's really interesting because a lot of people report dreams as a major way of contact, where, you know, they may even have been afraid of Santa Muerta in, you know, in Mexico City, depending on who you talk to. You know, they're either very hesitant to talk about her, because of, you know, a fear of her kind of power, or, you know, a relationship that they see as she's tied to kidnappers and drug dealers. That would usually be folks, you know, in the upper classes, and that kind of view it as, you know, tied to violence and drug dealers, which isn't necessarily true. But so it, you know, it has a kind of complex relationship. But, you know, folks who even that were afraid of her, they'll find themselves in a tough spot and they'll start having these dreams of, you know, a kind of grim reaper figure. And that's another thing to understand too, the way that she's portrayed is as essentially a grim reaper. And so they will, you know, they'll have this dream of the grim reaper kind of figure coming to them. They'll start this devotional relationship and suddenly whatever problem they were dealing with will go away. It can sound in the United States and in a Protestant context like, you know, that's an evil spirit, but that's actually fairly common in most of the world, where, you know, people have a different kind of understanding of the way the world works, dreams and that kind of thing. And I guess even in a Protestant setting too, depending on what your idea of charismatic traditions are, you know, dreams and that play a really important role, omens and messages from the spirit world. And she does stand over that, you know, in terms of this kind of relationship, this kind of intermediary to the spirit world. It's hard to give a real just like short, succinct thing because she also blends with Santeria. You know, there's different Santeros that have started to work with her. She blends with Palo Mayombe, which is a Cuban tradition, Palo Monte, which is a similar Cuban tradition, you know, and so she's kind of spread out as this powerful spirit intermediary in these traditions where people will work with her to gain access to the spirit world. Again, in a Protestant tradition, like that sounds bad, you know, for other folks that doesn't. So it really, it depends on a person's belief on where they want to put that, you know. The Catholic Church itself.
It also depends on which part of the Protestant world you're looking at. If you're looking at the Pentecostal, it might be not very well received. The Methodist, it would be received quite differently. And then you've got the Presbyterian part of Protestantism, which is all about reincarnation. And and you have all these different viewpoints. And again, I am, you know, I had religion 101 in college, and whatever else I've done, I've studied and I've learned on my own. And so it's interesting, you know, that Protestantism is not a very unified religion, from what I can tell.
No.
There's lots of different viewpoints. They go from just very, very native kind of, not exactly what I would call mainstream, all the way over to very strict sects. And so, and I don't want to talk any more about this because I'm just not the expert on it. We'll get, you know what, David, we'll get an expert on this particular thing. Cause I think it would be interesting for you and I, if you'd be interested for you and I to talk to someone who knows a lot about Protestantism. I don't even know if that's the right word. And, you know, I don't know. I hope it is.
Yeah.
But I think everyone knows what I'm talking about. We can find someone, and I think it would be good to talk about this. I mean, this is how we learn. You don't shut things out.
Well, it's interesting because one of my other areas of research is the Protestant spiritual warfare tradition. So, you know, and through that lens, you have a very kind of tight view of God and Christ and that's it, you know. However, what from my perspective, looking at, you know, parapsychology, psychical research, you know, magic traditions and that kind of thing, a lot of what they report experientially is very similar to what other people report in other traditions that they would demonize. So, you know, these dream visitations and that kind of thing, you'll find charismatics talking about their dream visitations in the same exact way that you would find a Santa Muerta devotee talking about their dream visitations. The only difference being that in the dream visitation for the Santa Muerta devotee, it's Santa Muerta. And in the dream visitation of the, you know, Pentecostal or charismatic person, you would find, Jesus there. And in the in the Santa Muerta, devotees may have Jesus and Santa Muerta. It's very complicated, you know. I mean, but when you get to the experiential realm, there's a lot of similarities there. And that's one of the things with Santa Muerta is that she is very oriented towards practical results, very oriented towards the world and interacting in the world. So, you know, death and life and prosperity, good luck, you know, you have different kind of relationships of, in the folk traditions, luck and prosperity have to do with health. So, you know, you have this idea of a person who has good luck also has good health, you know, and that luck is almost a sense of, if you have bad luck, it's an unhealthy relationship with the world. And so Santa Muerta comes in as a healer to give you better luck or to give you prosperity in that. And so that, you know, devotees will work with her in that way as well. And it's an interesting thing, you know. In the United States, it translates kind of differently because we don't have that, you know, we have a very kind of secular materialist worldview, even if folks, you know, have moved outside of that, that's still kind of the underlying basis of things. So, it may be hard to understand that relationship that she represents, but to her devotees, you know, she is there as the loving mother, or one of her names is the godmother. So, you know, you would think of a godmother as someone who would bring you to God, someone who helps your relationship with the world. You know, if your parents die, your godmother or your godparent comes in to help, you know, and that's kind of how she's viewed.
Okay. Well, you just did the entire episode that I wanted to do, and I really appreciate it because, you know, I didn't realize that you had an area of expertise in Protestantism. So, I mean, so thank you very much. I still want to explore that more because there is a there's a lot more to it. One of the things that I find very, because I've dealt with, I did 3 years as research associate at the Ryan Institute of Parapsychology in Durham. And
yeah.
I can tell you, if anything, buddy, if anything will change your view of the world, that will do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
Will completely change everything. And one article that they were very interested in had to do with the difference between meditation and prayer. And they had people that were practiced in the area of meditation meditate, and they would do brain scans, and they would have people who they felt really could pray. And what they found, and I'd like to get your take on this because this article has always fascinated me. It was, oh my God, and it was in Psychology Today. I mean, that is the last place you want to be getting any kind of information because Psychology Today, I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with anything. It has to do with selling magazines and acting perhaps paranormal, but that's okay. So anyway, what it said was, you know, the brain activity, if you're meditating, is almost nil. But when you are praying, when you are physically in your head stating something to the higher power you're talking to, your brain is acting like you're actually having a conversation. I mean, your brain acts a certain, like when you and I are talking, our brains are in a certain mode. You're talking to me, I'm processing it, I am then talking back to you, you're processing it, and there's an active connection here. And they found that when people pray, there seems to be an active connection coming from the other direction. And this is like, oh, this is probably 15-year-old article, I can find it and get it to you. But I think it's very interesting prayer to a deity, or perhaps prayer to a saint, or prayer to a relative, seems to get an answer back.
Yeah, there's that and relationship. Think, exactly. Yeah.
And it's like,
it's that,
you know,
it's,
I mean,
that relational. Yeah.
It is, but the fact that we don't see the corporal individual that we're praying to, but yet our brains are acting like there's a two-way conversation. I think it's great, and I think that is what I always tell people, that is the proof of the existence of God. And I guess if you look at it from the Catholic standpoint, that is the proof of the existence of God, Jesus, and the saints. Because then we deal with, at least in the Methodist Church, is the Trinity, the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost. And in the Catholic religion, you do have God, Jesus, and the saints. Did I get that right? I hope I did. I hope I'm not.
Yeah, and the Holy Ghost. Yeah, you got to toss the Holy Ghost.
And the Holy
Ghost. They got that too.
Right. Right. Yeah. Okay. But I'm sorry. I wanted to get that there's a bit of a different hierarchy in the Catholic Church than there is in the Protestant Church. But yet, prayer to one of these spirits, entities, Jesus, God, or the Holy Ghost, seems to get a reaction back. And I think it's quite natural because I believe in that, and maybe because I believe in it, it happens. But so what you're saying is people do pray to the entity of Santa Muerta, and they get relief. They get relief.
Yeah. They have, you know, my friend Hank, I think Hank's a good kind of case study because he grew up in East Texas. His dad was a rockabilly. His dad was a rockabilly musician, unfortunately an amphetamine addict. And, you know, I mean, Hank grew up in the most East Texas you could possibly grow up in, right? Like, dad's rockabilly guy. His mom, she's a cousin of one of the guys from Eagles.
He grew up in Louisiana, basically.
I mean,
yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so he sounds like he's from East Texas. You know, he acts like he's from East Texas. He was a white nationalist for a while. He went to, his parents died. I mean, he's East Texas to the point where he buried his own parents. He dug the graves of his parents. He has the shovels that he dug his parents' graves with. He lived on his parents' property, you know, up until that wasn't possible. He was a white nationalist for a while. He ended up in Juarez after his dad died, I think, and was, you know, just kind of lost. He goes into a cathedral just to, you know, clear his head or whatever, just because, you know, unless he's a tourist. And he has this kind of numinous experience where suddenly he feels there's something more, right? Like, he kind of has this conversion experience where he realized the white nationalism stuff is not where he's at. He goes and he's walking out and he sees this little kind of in Mexico, there's a lot of street side shrines to various folk saints and saints. And in this instance, it was Santa Muerta. And he looks at it, and I think he might have even been drunk at that point. And he goes, "All right, skeleton, if you're real, you know, I want you to take me to my knees and I want you to prove to me that you're real, and then I'll believe in you." Right. And this is just him being an asshole, kind of just a jerk. Right. And he does this. Well, the next 2 years of his life, he's homeless and he's just completely out of sorts. But in that process, he becomes humbled like he asked for, and he finds meaning. Yeah, he was taken to his knees. He's, you know, he was traveling around, and he ended up meeting some Santa Muerta devotees in a weird kind of way, and he didn't really stick with them. They turned out to be kind of not good individuals, but, you know,
the word sketchy.
Sketchy.
They're pretty
sketchy.
Sketchy
would be
good.
They would be quite sketch. Yeah, sketchy might be a good euphemism for it. So but in this process, he's taken to his knees, but he finds new meaning in life, right? And so he develops this relationship with his parents where, you know, his dad was not a good guy, and he's learned to forgive his father. And he developed a relationship with his mom, which was, you know, his relationship with his mom was always good, but it became much deeper. And it became a connection to God. And so in this whole process, he moved away from who he had been, which is angry, lost, and all of that. And since then, he's married now to a woman in Mexico. They've had a kid. He is happier than he's ever been or ever thought he would be. He thought, you know, that moment in Juarez was pretty much his suicide pact. He thought it was done, right? Like he was lost. It was over. Parents are dead. Not much going for him. Now he lives life to give to others. And he lives life, as he says, wherever there's one person, there's two people can eat. Meaning that, you know, he's always giving to people, and his whole goal now is...
Stop here. I read his story yesterday. There's an article about
mm-hmm.
him. Wherever two people mm-hmm. can eat, three people can survive.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
I read his story
exactly.
yesterday. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and so yeah. you know, I mean, you read that, right? Like, I mean, that's a changed man.
Yeah.
And that was through this figure, which it's a death saint, you know. I mean, it's Saint Death, now, you know. And so it's really where the person's coming from and where their heart is, you know. I mean, that's kind of what I found in these and in looking at all of this stuff is that, you know, it's more about the individual than it is about what this kind of outer trappings is. But
yeah. We've been talking about him, and I've known everything you were going to say because his is one of the first stories that you get when you look at Santa Muerte Experience.
Yeah.
On Google.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. And that's, yeah. And so, and I've known him for years now, and I've seen even from where he was at before, I've seen just him grow. And him just, you know, open up and become more expressive and more just open to life and to living and to being strong in helping other people and really having that kind of heart for charity and that. So, you know, when I see the other end of it, which is, you know, kind of the narco end of it, which is unpleasant, you know, and that may be something that I should talk about because it's, there is that end of it too, which is, you know, the darker end, which is, you know, and this isn't what all the devotees go to, but, you know, there's in the sense of a multifaceted miracle worker, when bad people go to Santa Muerta, they go for bad reasons and they seek power. And in that sense, you know, you get what the news media covers, which is that, you know, she's used for protection for cartels. She's used for protection for kidnappers. She's used in that kind of sense. And in that, when you see a death saint turn bad, you see the darkest that human experience can go to. It gets very dark, including there have been cases of human sacrifice in Mexico. Maybe even in the United States, they don't really talk about that. You can go and find FBI and Army War College papers on Santa Muerta, which cover that end of it. You know, and it gets pretty dark. The drug wars in Mexico are horrible. And the death toll and the human tragedy is very real. And she, in her dark aspect, whether or not it's the same thing, you know, it's the same name. So it does get very, very violent in that sense. But, you know, I've seen both sides. I've seen the evil side, and then I've seen Hank's experience, you know.
I mean, it can certainly be that intentions are rerouted, but we don't know. I mean, we do not know what
goes exactly.
on in that world.
Yeah.
And That's great. I'm still excited that I found your boy Hank, and it was a motivating and inspirational story. And
yeah, that's,
I think
that's
whenever there are good things that you can take out of anything, you've got to take them. I know that's a very liberal view. That may be the most liberal religious view in the world, but you know, listen, I have lived through the good and the bad of everything. Now, you know, I am not perfect, and I have had the best and the worst. I've seen the best of things and the worst of things. That sounded like Charles Dickens. Dickens probably knew knew more than most people think, and the whole idea of Santa Muerta is very interesting. It seems like it's something that we should have known more about earlier. But what you're telling me is that even our interview is early on in the game, right?
Yeah, I mean, 2001, it goes public. Andrew published his book in 2012, and it's still the only English language scholarly look at Santa Muerta. And currently what we're seeing is Santa Muerta entering the United States through the kind of neo-pagan beliefs and New Age beliefs. It's a developing, growing spirituality. And it shows no signs of stopping. There's devotees in the UK. There's devotees in the Philippines. There's devotees in Australia. There's devotees in Poland and Germany. There's signs of devotees in India. Because of the internet, and this weird phenomena where people have this experience with something they don't quite understand, and they find Santa Muerta and go, that's it. That was what I had a dream of. You know, or that was what I had this experience of. And so we're seeing this massive growth. Andrew says that in Mexico alone, there's probably 10 million devotees, possibly more, because it's a folk tradition. So the numbers, the demographics on it are kind of difficult. But if you look in terms of market value, there's stores called Botanicas, which service Santeria and Latin American traditions, and they're all over the United States. And a lot of botanicas have gone to the point where 50% of their revenue is driven by Santa Muerta. So if you look at that, you know, in terms of market, that's pretty big. So, you know, we're seeing this growing tradition. And, you know, again, looking at the just state of the world, people are looking for something, you know, and so Santa Muerta is filling a niche that seems to be important to people right now.
Well, as long as whatever they're looking for brings them good results and helps them. Yeah, I mean, I guess you just have to look at the bottom line. I know that sounds terrible.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is if what you're looking for and you find brings good results and it brings you a better life and safety, then how can you complain? I mean, we don't know about this term salvation is a very difficult term to decipher. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's like, what is salvation? And that is beyond the scope of tonight's episode. What is salvation? It's a great question. And maybe, you know, maybe this is a good topic for later on. I don't know. But I guess if we had to go to our third level, we're going to go to the doctoral seminar lecture on Santa Muerta. We have done the 101, which is the undergraduate course. We've done the junior, senior, graduate level course. Now we're going to go to the doctoral seminar. How does this apply to you and me? How does this apply to our friends? Well, that's a tough question. And I guess I ask the worst questions on ScaryCast because I know I've got the best guests. Oh, that's a patronizing statement, isn't it? Oh, you got it. Oh, you hate me now.
You're setting me up for failure here. That's
No, actually, I'm not. You're not going to fail. Yeah, I wouldn't ask you a question that you're going to fail on. I just know this is going to be brilliant. You know, I sound like I'm from Australia. It'll be brilliant. Okay.
Well, you know, I think so what I found with this is it leads us, I think, you know, we've been kind of teasing this question the whole way. You know, I mean, you were talking about earlier kind of near-death experiences and psychic experiences and that. I think one of the things with Santa Muerta that I've discovered is, you know, what are we dealing with, right? When we talk about these things, because as you go around the world and you look at these experiences and you look at these experiences that people have, in this particular instance, it's focused through, as Hank jokingly says, a plastic skeleton. And he says that as a joke because a lot of the, you know, the statue icons that you can buy are plastic.
I must stop you for a moment. Because Mayor Baba, do you know who Mayor Baba is?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Mayor Spiritual Center is here in Myrtle Beach. I'm allowed to go over there. When I was a professor, they got to know me. They liked me. And Mayor Baba had some very wealthy ladies who were supporters of him. And they said, what does God want us to know? And he went and got a record player. And he played La Cucaracha. And he smiled at them. And they got all mad at him. And what he wrote down was, why are you mad at me? God wrote this song. You asked about God. You should find God in this song. And he dismissed them. And he refused to take money from them again.
Right.
I think that brings a lot of credence to what you just said. We're all pretty sure. But many people like me are certain that Mayor Baba was a holy man, a man of the highest reputation, and did great things. And when I first heard that story, it didn't compute, and I kept playing it over in my head. It's like, if you want to ask me where to find God, I'll play you the most ridiculous thing, find God in it, and you've grown.
Right.
I'll shut up now. I've wanted to tell that story, and I did. There you go.
Well, that's exactly it, and that's what Hank's found, you know, and that kind of is, you know, in my own research in that, that's kind of the thing. It's, you know, it's when you look out into the world, what are you looking for, you know? And, you know, what these, you know, in the Buddhist tradition talks about vehicles and how, you know, the elements of faith and the elements of devotion are vehicles to get to a higher state. And so, you know, the devotees of Santa Muerta have found Santa Muerta to be a vehicle, you know, and some look for a vehicle to get power. And some look to a vehicle to get, you know, to a higher level and to get to a higher understanding of the world and to a higher understanding of themselves and their relationship with the divine and that kind of thing. So, you know, I think that's, for personally, that's one of the biggest lessons that I've learned looking at a folk saint and a tradition that is defamed in a lot of ways and tied in some ways to some darker elements of the world. Where still people find, they find faith in it. And I think your story is, that's exactly it. You know, I mean, that's exactly it, is the cucaracha, right? And which is in Spanish, the cockroach. So, you know.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, it's like, we want to know where to find God. So he plays La Cucaracha. And they get mad.
Right. Right.
You can't find God there. You can't find him anywhere.
Right. You know, and that's such a wonderful teaching story because if you look in any tradition, you will find that teaching story. Even in the Christian tradition, you have John the Baptist where, you know, he's out in the desert And, you know, people come to him and he's like, well, you know, who did you come here to see? You know, like, what are you looking for? You know, like, I'm out here in my hair shirt, you know, as a eating locusts and honey. You know, what are you looking for?
Yeah.
You know,
you looking for me? I'm surprised.
Yeah.
You know, this is who you got. Wow.
And so that, yeah. You know, and that kind of, and when I first started looking into this, thankfully I'm not tied to a university in my scholarship, so I could be open to that kind of lesson. That's what I found looking into Santa Muerta is, you know, here's a figure that looks like death. And, you know, what are you going to see in that? And one of the things that I found was the silence of it, because you're looking at a skull, you know, you're looking at a figure that's terrifying and that most people would consider, you know, you want to avoid death. And then here's this devotional tradition.
Yeah. And I just had an idea, something that I wanted to bring up. Think of the venerable tarot. The death card, death means rebirth. It doesn't mean the end. There are other ways.
Right.
There are many ways to reach the end, but the death card means rebirth, doesn't it?
Right. Exactly. And
what's on the death card?
The skeleton. Exactly. Yeah. You have the Grim Reaper. Exactly. And the Grim Reaper, right, has a reaping tool. It's a reaping tool, which is used for what? It's used for harvesting. It's used for harvest. And yeah, I mean, it's the, you know, when we harvest plants, we're killing them, you know, and then that goes back to life, you know, and that within the, you know, within the Latin American traditions, you know, with the Day of the Dead and that's part of the message there. Is that this is just this continuous wheel of change that we're on, you know? And so, yeah, it's a very powerful way to look at it. Unfortunately, when you reach the world and that, you know, that can turn different ways. But I think at its deepest level, that's kind of the message you get.
And, you know, it might be that Santa Muerta is... as ye sow, so shall ye reap. And if you want to do bad things, sure you can do bad things, but oh my goodness, what are those bad things going to bring you?
Well, that's an interesting thing too, yeah.
That's the notion of free will.
Yeah.
And it's like if you really be a bad guy and be successful by hurting people, you can be. We see it all the time. But if you want to be a good guy and not hurt people, you can still be successful. So Santa Muerta seems like it's a very interesting entity that can amplify what you want. But you better be careful.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing too, is because, you know, even in the cartel aspects of it, where you have the drug cartels in northern Mexico. One of the folks that Andrew and I have had the honor, and I mean that in a deep way, of communicating with through this research is a fellow named Robert Bunker. And he was the FBI futurist in residence at Quantico. He writes and works with the Army War College. He is incredibly nuanced scholar of criminal justice and kind of warfare, I guess. But this idea of how, you know, sowing and reaping and that, he's covered the darkest aspects of this tradition. And so in reading his material about, you know, the human sacrifice and all the rest of it, I've gotten a perspective where even the darkest aspects of this, when they deal with that, the way that these, you know, if you're going to go on the kind of the bad end of Santa Muerta and you're going to use it for power and you're going to do all that stuff, the way that those people end up is never good. None of these cartel people end up, you know, they, when they die, they don't die in a good way. They die in a horrible way. And, you know, a lot of the devotees of Santa Muerta, when they look at the darker aspects of Santa Muerta, they're like, well, yeah, but how are you going to end up? You'll have that moment of glory. You know, you'll be the big kingpin for a second. But when
you'll be
no
on top
the
of the world, Ma, you, right, as Jimmy Cagney said, you'll be on top of the world, Ma.
Yeah, and then you're going to be under it. You know, I mean, then that's the thing. And when, you know, I mean, it's not a good way to go. You fall when you go up that high, you fall pretty far, you know. And so that's kind of an interesting element there.
And that's one thing that leads us to think that Santa Muerta is an amplifier for you. If you want it to be good, it will be good. If you want it to be bad, it will be bad. And either way, you will reap what you have sown and the consequences.
Yeah.
If you do something good, the consequences are going to blow up 10 times over and it's going to be wonderful. If you reap the bad, it can be so inhumanly bad for you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's like, look at El Chapo. You know his
right.
attorney said the conditions he's under in prison are inhumane. Well, think about all the people he killed personally. And
exactly.
Well, I mean, so he got as he sowed, so did he reap. So it looks like nobody's an expert on anything. But I think one thing to learn, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that Santa Muerte is an amplifier. If you need help, you will get help. If you want to do things in the wrong way, well, you'll get what you get. As ye sow, so shall ye reap.
That seems to be the case. It seems to be it. Yeah, that seems to be it. Yeah, I mean, that seems to be.
And I hope I haven't oversimplified it. I tend to oversimplify because I like to see patterns. That's all my research in computing science is about patterns. The idea of Christopher Alexander and his architectural patterns, and then the patterns that I found in website development, and the patterns that show up over and over, the patterns that show up. I've got an unpublished paper about patterns in music. Patterns are all over. We need to realize that. There's a certain fundamental group of patterns. There's only a certain number of things that – there are a certain number of problems and a certain number of solutions. They may – masquerade as other problems and other whatever, but there are really only a certain number of problems and there are a certain number of solutions. I'll just say this and then I'll let you go. That is called the theory of inventive problem solving trees, TRIZ. And I have a paper in one of the conferences of the Association of Communicating Machinists. Is called Communicating Design Patterns with Trees, stating there's only a finite number of problems and there's a finite number of ways to solve those problems. You just have to see how they map from one to the other. Therefore, if you want to solve a problem that's a good problem, it'll go one way. If it's a bad problem, it'll go the other way. And you can amplify it, and then you have this marvelous spirit, Santa Muerte, that can do exactly that. By the way, I wanted to say this so I could get this recorded so that when we go back and listen to it, well, I want to bring this up to you again. I hope you don't mind that.
Oh, no, yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, that actually, to jump kind of sideways, you know, one of the areas that I've been looking at a lot lately is the UFO topic. And obviously Jacques Vallée is a huge figure in the field of UFO studies, and he comes out of a computer science background. And that is kind of, you know, he looked at the UFO problem through that lens. And through that, you know, he developed this question of dimensionality and what exactly is reality, right? So what is what became kind of known as the control theory of UFOs is, are these things, this message that comes to us to kind of push us to the next level? You know, the absurdity that you find in a lot of UFO situations where, you know, like Bigfoot comes out of UFO and what does that mean and that kind of stuff. Are these things there to bring the question up to kind of push us to that next level of thinking? And
I'll fill you in on the answer. We'll do it after the show. I'll fill you in on the answer to that one. Okay. There actually isn't.
Yeah,
there's an answer now. I'll fill you in.
Oh, I'm excited to hear. And so within that, there's a fellow right now, an MIT game developer named Riz Virk, who's written a book called Simulation Hypothesis, which goes, Nick Bostrom is a theorist that wrote this paper on the simulation hypothesis of, are we living in a computer-generated simulation? And whether or not there's a computer on the back end of that, reality seems to be very malleable. And so when you have these figures like Santa Muerta, they seem to be almost like a program that you can stick in that will, you know, kind of run within this reality to, as you said, you know, amplify, you know, intention.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
So,
that's exactly what I was saying. That's
and so you have
I didn't want to just come out and say it, but – you know, the whole point is Santa Muerte is an amplifier.
Right.
You get what
right.
you want. Be careful.
Right. Right. And that's, you know, and that is definitely, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, conversations like this, I think, are really fruitful because when you look at it at an academic level, this kind of thing, the meaning of it doesn't necessarily come out. And so when Andrew and I are writing about it, you know, for Skeleton Saint, or when Andrew's doing his research, he's coming from a very strict religious studies. This is what people believe. And, you know, here's the, you know, kind of religious aspects of it. Here's how it ties into different traditions. But thankfully, again, I don't sit with the university, so I don't have to toe that line. And I can actually deal with people's lived experience. And people's lived experience with this thing is very much as an amplifier, as a vehicle for their beliefs, you know, and as a way to kind of interact with the matrix, you know, and to interact with that kind of malleable nature of reality.
Boy, we
that,
always we always get back to the matrix, don't we?
That's right. Yes, yes. Since that
don't
movie came out, it's definitely become a thing. Yeah.
Back to the matrix. We always do. There you go. I was just waiting. I knew it had to come. That's great. That's great.
It's got to show up somewhere. So yeah.
It does. And so what I'll say is, because we're closing down on our time for this super special edition of ScaryCast, and I want to say this has been one of the best intellectual discussions I've ever had in my life. With a doctorate and three master's degrees, I've never had such a good intellectual discussion about so many topics that seem to point in the same direction. And David,
well, I appreciate that.
I've got to ask you, are you coming back? I've got to have you back.
I would love to. Absolutely. This has been one of the best podcast experiences that I've ever been on. So we share in that, and one of the best conversations on Santa Muerta. So this, happy to come back on any topic I'm vetted in. We can definitely do.
I think this would be just continued. It's very interesting. I got, I have a favorite guest on ScaryCast, and I'm going to say something very odd. I sent out a Mother's Day greeting to a lot of my friends because I think it's appropriate to say Mother's Day greetings to you and your family and your friends. That's the way I believe. And I got one back, said, well, if you weren't such a Republican bastard, you'd be at Haight-Ashbury Street with me and my wife. I'm in drag, and she's in a tuxedo, and FTD just brought us both flowers. And I thought to myself, what a closed-minded son of a bitch you are. You deserve your flowers. I've never heard anything like that.
No.
And here we are, 9 minutes and 44 seconds left in Scary Cast, and I'll never tell you who my guest is because that guest has been on here 3 times. Love the guy. But when he sent that to me, I thought, what on earth is going on with this world? You should be here at the corner of Haight and Ashbury Street. If you don't know, that's in San Francisco. I'm in drag, and my wife is in a tuxedo, and we both got flowers from FTD. And I thought, oh, come on. We don't need that. That's just dumb. That's just dumb. Anyway, I'm sorry. I just had to say it on this Mother's Day edition of Scary Cast with one of the best guests I have ever had, David Metcalf. So you said you'd come back. I'm going to hold you to it. I got to thank Kip Ramey for getting you on here, for introducing me to you, and we will have post-interview chat, if that's okay for a moment. And I got to say
absolutely.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, we got a great guest coming up. I've got my guest list. It's down in some text file somewhere. I can't tell you what it is, but we're going to have a great guest this Thursday night, 11 p.m., with Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling, and Devin Tate from Hollywood. We're going to have another legendary issue of Scary Cast. So thanks a lot, David. You've been the best. It's been so much fun.
Thank you so much.
Santa Muerte, thank you for what you do, because without what you do,
thank you.
People without hope would have no one to talk to. I don't care about the bad guys. I care about the people with no hope. Those people can talk to you, and you amplify their concerns. So thank you, Santa Muerte. This is Dr. John signing off. David, you have a good one, okay?
Thank you so much. You too. This is great.
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon. Au revoir.